Hi, this is Doug with the Affair Recovery Movement, and this is one of our group coaching sessions. And today, I have the honor of having as my guest David Fetter. David is a psychotherapist specializing in helping people recover from infidelity. He's a forgiveness trainer and a certified sex addiction therapist as well. He is also the founder of the website My Life After an Affair and is passionate about helping people recover from infidelity. And I like what he says on his site, and it reads, "Everyone will recover from infidelity. You have no choice. The question is how." David, thank you for being here today, and welcome.
Thanks very much, Doug. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, certainly glad to have you. And
thank you.
You're from the Toronto area, is that correct?
Yeah, we're here in Toronto, in Ontario. Just not that far from you. How far away are you?
Well, I'm in the Cincinnati area, so I think, I don't know, what is that? It's not too god-awful far, maybe about 6-7 hours, something like that.
Yeah, so it's an easy car ride.
There you go. I think we're going to head on up this summer to Algonquin, I think, and spend some time up there, so looking forward to that.
Yeah, bring some bug spray.
Well, I think it might be July. Hopefully those things are dead by then, but I know what you mean.
Well, you're gonna have to deal with the mosquitoes. The black fly should be gone by then, but it's a beautiful, beautiful part of Ontario, and I'm sure you're gonna have a great time. Are you gonna do some camping?
Yeah, we have an RV, so we'll head on up there. I hope to go to Killarney as well, and maybe some other places. So we'll see. We'll play it by ear.
Yeah, that's a great part of Ontario.
Yep. Well, anyway, to get along with our discussion in this group session, I wanted to talk about a common problem that or issue that many, if not most, of our members are either experiencing or at some point in the recovery and healing process, or they're experiencing it now. And that is the kind of loss of control or power of the situation. And, basically they're left to fend for themselves, and they're not really getting much help from their unfaithful partner.
Right.
And what I've found, and I've been talking to a lot of people here the last couple of weeks, mentoring them, and it just kind of drives it home even more, because I'm talking to a lot of people in the same type of situations, but there's generally two types. And one is the unfaithful person who refuses to end the affair or make a choice as to who they want to choose to be with, and, you know, what does the hurt spouse do in that situation. And then the second type is the scenario where one of the unfaithful spouses isn't, or the unfaithful spouse isn't participating in the recovery and healing process at all. It's kind of the, you know, okay, it's over, it's done with, and I just get over it type of situation. Mm-hmm. And I want to kind of, for the purpose of this session, really concentrate on that, the second scenario. I think most of our members, or at least the people I talk to, most of them, their spouses, their affair is supposedly over, so they're in kind of the healing and recovery mode at this point. But
mm-hmm.
But I wanted to kind of start by reading an excerpt from an email that I received a while back, and you and I kind of looked over this at one point or discussed it, but let me read it here. It says, "I've been going to group sessions and have gotten support and learned many coping mechanisms to help with my despair. I've tried to work with my spouse, but for 4 months after D-Day, he was done. Over it. Get over it or don't. Move on. How I hate those hurtful words. He says he's been good, he's made changes, and I have nothing to worry about. How do I know? Because he tells me so. Here's the thing. He still works at that company. He still has contact with his affair partner, though he says it's over. He won't prove it by showing text and emails after promising to do just that. On and on. One broken promise after another. He doesn't care to rebuild trust. He doesn't care about forgiveness. He says to just be happy. No resolution. No more discussion or clarification." So, this is kind of an email that kind of emphasizes the type of thing that I see quite a bit, and I'm sure you probably see a lot similar things. And so what's a person to do in this type of situation? How can we help people that are in this type of situation?
Well,
loaded,
you know,
question, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's a great question. And, you know, I guess my immediate reaction is to say that there's probably no cookie cutter solution that's going to fit for everyone. So,
sure.
You know, I think that when people are listening to, you know, what we have to say here today, it's important for people to reflect on what's being talked about and what's being suggested, but at the same time to reflect upon their own situation and, you know, just think about it with regards to the, you know, parameters of their own situation and the dynamics of their own situation. And if need be, you know, continue discussing it in a support group or continue discussing it with a therapist or people like yourself who mentor other people. So, but, you know, in terms of helping a person in that situation, you know, my immediate reaction and what really jumps out is where the person wrote one broken promise after another. And, you know, that her partner who had the affair is not willing or prepared to do anything to offer this lady reassurance. And that's really disturbing, you know, because rebuilding trust, you know, what I tell people is that rebuilding trust takes time, but it's also how that time is being spent. And finally, it takes two people. So,
right.
You know, I think the first question that that the person who wrote that email or people in that situation really need to think about is if their partner who was unfaithful, the involved partner, is not going to participate in the process, then what is really going on here? Because it sounds in that email, it sounds as though her husband just wants her to, you know, move on, get over it, and believe everything he's saying. But it's pretty, you know, it's pretty darn hard to believe, you know, your partner who cheated on you 4 months later. So
exactly.
I think the first question that I would have for her is, you know, what is really going on for you when you hear that he continues to break promises? Because again, you know, breaking promises, not showing emails or whatever it is that she said he would show her, that's, you know, promising one thing, not following through, that's another betrayal. So if he's invested in continuing to dishonor her, then, you know, I would be asking her to think about, you know, what's truly in her best interest.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And that makes perfect sense. And I guess she's got a lot of tough decisions to make and you know, whether or not to continue forward, I guess, at this point in time with the marriage. Is that what you're thinking?
Well, I'm thinking one step before that. Like, you know, I'm thinking that there's, you know, I had a, if I could just digress for a moment.
Please.
I had a session with a gentleman, you know, just a few days ago, and basically what he was telling me was that he's pretty sure that his partner has been unfaithful and denies it whenever he confronts her with it, but it's pretty certain. And you know, but what I spoke to him about was getting in touch with his own power. And By saying that, what I really meant was, what are your boundaries? Because it seems to me that you know, your spouse is wanting to have her cake and eat it too. She, you know, you suspect that she's being unfaithful. She hasn't left you. It's been, you know, at least a half a year since you confronted her. What's really going on? And you know, I think for some partners, as long as they feel that they could have their cake and eat it too, they'll take both.
Well, sure.
And so what I basically say to people is, what are your boundaries? You know, what are your non-negotiable boundaries? What can you live with? What can you not live with? And you know, can you get in touch with those? And can you express them or at least admit them, acknowledge them to yourself, and then share them with your partner. Now, it's not that simple, because, you know, a person, you know, we always say, and, you know, whether we're talking about recovering from infidelity or we're talking about parenting your children, we basically say, don't say something you can't follow through with.
Right.
And, you know, so what I'm talking about is, you know, first the person, the hurt partner, in my view, needs to work on themselves. They need to recover some of their self-esteem, some of their confidence, and get themselves in a better place, so that, you know, that they're, you know, not living in a situation where they're so invested in the outcome that they're basically handcuffing themselves. Because a lot of people, you know, are afraid to do, you know, very much, or they're afraid to say anything, because they're afraid that if their you know, spouse doesn't sort of come along and do what they're asking, then they're in a position where they're going to be alone, or they're going to have to end their marriage or whatever. So, and they're not prepared for that. So the very first thing that I would say to people is, don't focus on your husband or wife who was unfaithful. They're going to do what they want to do. They're going to do what they choose to do. You can't make them do anything that they don't want to do. Excuse me. So don't focus on that. Focus on getting stronger. Focus on improving yourself, so that you have a greater sense that you can actually, regardless of the outcome, you're going to be okay. And once you're in, you know, once you've done that work, you're going to be in a much better place to establish some boundaries around what's okay and what's not okay. So, for example, back to your email from the woman who wrote it. Why is she accepting a situation where her husband is promising that he's going to, you know, he's saying he's being faithful, he's made changes, but he's not willing to prove it? Why is that okay for the hurt partner? Why is that accepted by the hurt partner? You know, because it's not, it's just an unacceptable situation. If well, her husband is not, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, I agree. And I think most of the time, what I find anyway, is there's an underlying fear of some sort that stops them from, you know, showing their power and stops them from, you know, saying enough is enough.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think so. And, you know, ultimately, what I'm hearing a lot of in my practice is that the person is afraid of losing the relationship. They're afraid of, you know, they're afraid of being alone. They're afraid of all the changes that they'll likely encounter, or they anticipate having to encounter, if their spouse doesn't play ball with them. And so it's the fear of loss, the fear of change, the fear of being alone. And those are all feelings and emotions that need to be addressed in some context, or in some place, you know, whether it be in a therapist's office, mentoring with you, or in a support group. It needs to be addressed. That person needs to get in touch with, what are they really afraid of? Because very often what ultimately happens is, you know, it's either an issue of self-esteem and confidence, feeling dependent, and not having the belief that they can, that they'll be okay. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's really, really critically important for the hurt partner, to focus on themselves, so that they can be their own best resource, as opposed to being dependent on someone who really may not want to be there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Good stuff.
Or who is expecting something which is, you know, perhaps, you know, a little bit too much, and that is, you know, I did this, it's impacted you, but I'm not going to be part of your healing. And that's really not, that doesn't work very well. You know, most of the, right. Most of the work that I've ever done, and most of the research I've ever read, it all says one thing, and that is the person who hurts has to be the person who heals. And if, you know, if that's not happening, then the hurt partner's at a distinct disadvantage.
Yeah. Well, there's no doubt, and it's unfortunate because there's so many people, you know, either that I talk to or emails from where that's just not happening. And, you know, I don't know if it's just a temporary thing, you know, it's a point in time in their recovery process where it's just not happening. Maybe it's too soon where the guy or woman doesn't feel that they're able to help, but it's just not being done. And I guess that, you know, what I'm seeing, in addition to the things that you mentioned, also one of the other fears is that, you know, they just don't want to get hurt again. You know, they don't want to go through the pain again. And so rather than really press the issue, a lot of times they just kind of let it go. And they walk on eggshells and they just kind of exist. And it's a horrible thing, I would imagine.
I totally agree with you, but you know, as you were speaking, I was just thinking that the other side of it, at least my experience has shown me this time and time again, that if the person who had the affair, whether you call it the involved partner, the participating partner, whatever label that we give them, when that person's not doing the work, I get really concerned that there's an explanation for why that person's not doing the work. And more often than not always, so I don't want to say that this is like 100%, but a good part of the time, it's because the person who had the affair is not invested in the recovery. And the reason they're not invested in the recovery is because they haven't either ended the affair or they're emotionally still invested in the affair partner. And that's another factor that needs to be addressed in therapy. So, you know, I definitely encourage people to be doing that work somewhere.
Or it could just be too, and I agree, first of all, but it could also be too, though, that they're just also just not invested in their current relationship for whatever reason, or their marriage. And they just would almost rather it be over, but they don't have the guts to do it or whatever. I mean, is that, you see that type of thing too?
Well, you know, I think that there's for sure. And you know, I think that these are all things that need to be considered. But I think from the perspective of the hurt partner, you know, sometimes hurt partners get into a funk, if you will, where they believe that if they only try harder, they'll convince their spouse, you know, the involved partner to, excuse me, to come along. And, you know, so the onus is on the hurt partner to convince them and to cajole them and to somehow make them make the, you know, so-called right decision. And, I don't think that that's the responsibility of the hurt partner. I think the involved partner or participating partner needs to make that decision with regards to who they want to be with and what they're prepared to do to make it happen. And you know, sometimes that needs to be in the context of individual therapy to really figure out what it is that they're wanting and why they want it, and you know, help them get the guts to let the hurt partner. No, but I think from the hurt partner's perspective, if they're not getting the cooperation of the spouse who went outside the marriage, and they don't get the support and the work is not being done, my advice is for the hurt partner to be asking themselves, you know, what this may mean, and work on themselves to get stronger so that they can make a good decision for themselves.
Yeah, that's excellent advice. So continuing on with the empowerment theme, then, other than working on themselves to get to a point where they feel more confident and more assured and that sort of thing, is there anything else that can help them to maybe come from a standpoint of power or control?
Well, you know, one of the things that you and I have spoken about before, and that is I talk about vision. And, you know, I really think it's about the individual, you know, getting their power, but also having a very clear vision of what it is that they want in their life and what's going to make them happy. So, you know, I talk about vision, which is an acronym that I came up with, that with each letter of the word vision standing for something. And okay. V is exactly what it is, you know, what is your vision for yourself and for, if there's children involved as well, you know, what is your vision of where you want to be in your life? And, you know, it doesn't, this is not going to be an answer that someone's going to be able to come up with in 30 seconds or less. You know, this may take some time. Because after an affair, one of the things that, you know, many people are struggling with is, you know, that their life and their life vision has rapidly and drastically changed, you know, from the vision of being a family and seeing your children grow up and all the things that involves, to possibly having to, you know, go through life without that person in your life. But it's really what is going to make you get closer to being the person you want to be, and part of that is that, you know, I think that not letting ourselves be treated in a way that is not honoring us or disrespectful of us, and if and our vision, I think everybody's vision should be that we're going to be respected, we're going to be honored, and we're going to be treated with value, and or as if we have value, because we all do. So getting in touch with what that vision is and being able to articulate it to yourself, you know, basically make it crystal clear so you could almost see it in your mind's eye.
Can I interrupt you real quick? Is this vision, the V part, is this something that one should share with their unfaithful partner, or is it something it's more internalized?
Well, I think it's something that, you know, to use the word internalized, I think it's something I think it's a great question. I would say that it informs the next step. So it informs the hurt partner that this is how I'm going to interact with my partner, with my involved partner from now on. You know, I'm expected. Like in my vision, I expect that people that I surround myself with will treat me with respect, for example. Well, you know, going back to your email, is him telling her, just get over it, trust me, I'm not going to show you proof that I'm not doing certain things that you may think I'm doing. Is that honoring her? Well, if she says, well, no, that's not honoring me, well, then I would take that to the next step. I say, okay, so what do you want to tell your spouse in regards to that? What will you accept and what will you not accept? And what does that tell you about your partner that you may want to tell him? You know, in other words, well, if you're doing that and you're not going to follow through with your promises as you made a promise to me that you will show me proof that I'm not in touch with the affair partner, then when you tell me that, that's another betrayal. I will not accept that any longer. That's not consistent with my vision of honoring me and surrounding myself with people who make me feel good about me. So it's an internal process that ultimately informs the hurt partner as to what they will accept and how they will interact with the involved partner moving forward. I hope that answers your question.
It does. Thank you.
You're welcome. The eye of vision is making informed choices. So I kind of, in a sense, I just talked about that in terms of making choices that are consistent with the vision. The S is safety. That rebuilding a relationship after an affair could only, in my opinion, occur within a context of safety for both people. So that woman in your example may not feel safe if her husband is not going to show her proof or make her feel better or help her heal. So S is for safety.
It could go the other way too. There could be maybe in some instances, and I've witnessed this, the betrayed person is the one that's not creating a safe environment for the other person to share and talk, and they feel like they're afraid to or for being punished or being that they're going to lose their spouse or something like that. I mean, do you encounter that at all too?
It's certainly not uncommon.
And, so it goes both ways, think, yeah.
It does go both ways. I think that that's an excellent point for sure. The second eye of vision is insight. You know, having insight into yourself, having understanding of yourself, why you want certain things, why you accept certain things, just gaining insight also into why there even happened. So these are all I just ended a session before this call with you where the woman who's her partner said, I don't take any responsibility for when my husband had an affair. And you know, knowing the history as I do, I know the husband sees it very differently than she does. And but she's taking on that perspective, and you know, basically she's wanting her husband to admit that. And I guess part of it is my thinking is we got to do some more work on helping this woman have greater insight into the overall dynamic of how they got there. O is opportunity and growth, and I encourage both parties to see the affair, even though it's so traumatic and it's so painful and it's so hurtful and so devastating in so many ways. Once there has been some healing and grieving that the relationship as it was has now ended, if people can start looking at this as an opportunity, you know, certainly for people who are healing, to get, either as a couple or separately when the relationship has ended, looking at it as an opportunity for learning, for growth, and for improving, you know, not only the relationship if the couple is still working at it, or improving and growing as an individual, that will help them in their subsequent relationships. And the N in vision is nurture. It's about, you know, again, healing happens within a safety, as I mentioned, an atmosphere of safety, but also an atmosphere of nurture, that people, that people cannot heal if all they want to do is hurt one another, and if they can focus on nurturing either one another, each other, or certainly nurturing themselves, and again, you know, when the hurt partner is in a situation such as the email that you received, I think that woman has to, you know, I would encourage that woman to nurture herself, to be kind to herself, to look after herself and not allow herself to be treated in ways that is not kind. And that takes us back to setting up appropriate boundaries.
Right.
But part of boundaries, I should say part of boundaries is also there are consequences that go along with boundaries, and people, you know, people need to be mindful of that as well.
You kind of just took the words out of my mouth in a way. Because the one thing I find is that, you know, people are going to continue to do what they're allowed to do or what they've been getting away with, you know.
Yeah.
And if there are no consequences, it's just going to keep going. So to that end, then, do you believe in ultimatums, or do you what are your thoughts on that?
I don't really believe in ultimatums, because ultimatums is about control, and I don't really think we have the ability to control another person, and nor do I think that that creates for a healthy healing process. What I do say is I feel that when a person sets up appropriate healthy boundaries, and I spend a lot of time with people helping them establish those boundaries, and also the consequences that go along with the boundaries that they could live with. But the way I encourage people to establish boundaries is really, this is what I need in order to continue working on this relationship, or this is what I need to just be with you. These are, you know, the bottom line, non-negotiable kind of things. So, for example, I need you to end the affair. If the affair doesn't end, there's no healing, there's no recovery, there's no relationship. But I don't believe in ultimatums. What I do believe is setting up, encouraging people to set up boundaries, but do it in such a way that the involved partner, for example, would be able to make a choice. And depending on that choice, the hurt partner will follow through with whatever it is they feel is necessary for them. So, for example, a person saying, I would like you to end the affair. And if the spouse does not want to end the affair or goes back to the affair partner, there's no ultimatum involved, but the hurt partner decides, for example, well, I can't be in this relationship then, and I file for divorce. So it's not an ultimatum. It's just that there's a consequence for every action, or there's a reaction for every action, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, a lot of people are afraid to do that just because, you know, they want to save their marriage. You know, they're at a point in time where, you know, they're desperate to hang on to their marriage, and they love their spouse even though they've been hurt and everything. And that's it's a very scary time for them to try to enforce boundaries. And to be honest, a lot of them don't even know what boundaries to enforce. And that's good that, you know, you go through that exercise with people, because I have to kind of counsel people a lot as to what some typical boundaries could be, because they just are afraid to do it. And, you know, they're just living in fear that their husband or wife is going to leave them if they push too much, you know. And
Right. But I think, you know, Doug, the thing is, though, everybody – like, I think we all want to be treated well,
right,
by the person we're with. And, you know, I think that there's a real problem when someone is, or shall we say, it makes me very concerned for the well-being of the individual when they're just so desperate to hold on to a relationship that is toxic. And, you know, and that's where I do a lot of individual work with that spouse, so that they could work through that. Because the fear that you're talking about, you know, whether it be fear of being alone or, you know, fear of not being able to make it in life, not be able to find another partner, you know, I mean, these are all, you know, fears that people have, and I respect it. Most times that they don't come to fruition. You know, we need to work through that so that we're honoring ourselves and be good to ourselves. I do understand and totally respect that people make choices to stay in relationships that are not satisfying or not good for them for all sorts of reasons. And sometimes we are stuck. And I don't want anybody to feel bad, you know, for any of your listeners who may be in that kind of situation. But I think it really comes down to, you know, in those kind of situations, not working so much on the relationship, but working on the individual. Because you can't work on the relationship if one person is not wanting to work on the relationship. So, you know, I really encourage people to focus on themselves, let their, you know, let the involved partner make their own decisions, and then, go from there.
It's good stuff. Okay. Switching gears maybe just a little bit. Do you remember the an email you sent me with do's and don'ts?
Mm-hmm.
That the HURT partner may want to consider?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
I don't know if you have that in front of you, but maybe we can go through that briefly, and then we'll wrap things up.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for bringing that up. There's about eight do's and don'ts that I sent to you, as you mentioned. These are things that the HURT partner may want to consider. The first one is going to be the do, and the second one is the do not. So the first one is accept, that the HURT partner should accept that the affair happened. You know, very often people are, and it's the first stage of grieving, you know, denying the reality that the affair actually happened. Obviously, we can't start work before we accept the reality of what it is that happened, versus the do not, insisting on holding on to the past and trying to recreate the past, but accepting that the relationship as we knew it has died. The second do is discover your best self and be that person. Well, I think that most of the things we were talking about, you know, in this call is really about encouraging the HURT partner to be their best self. And that takes some work. For sure, it takes some work. And the do not is define yourself based on what the involved partner does or does not do. You know, too often, I hear a HURT partner say, you know, they don't feel as though they're enough. And otherwise, the involved partner would want to work with them and try to save the relationship. Very often, the affair isn't even about the HURT partner, but it's about issues and unresolved childhood trauma or whatever it is that the involved partner hasn't dealt with. So I encourage the HURT partner to just focus on being their best self and be that person. The third do is know your vision and keep focused on it. So we talked about vision and, you know, again, making that crystal clear in your mind and staying focused on it and working on that each and every day. So in order to do that, you know, connect with you, Doug, you know, in your mentoring program, find a therapist, a support group. And in addition to all of those, I encourage people to journal at least twice a day about, you know, are they staying focused on their vision? And if not, what's taking them off course and bring them back on course? The third don't. Or do not is be codependent on your spouse. And it's kind of connected to the second one of how you define yourself. You know, most people will be fine if they have to move on alone and being able to accept that. The fourth one is what we talked about. Drafting healthy boundaries or consequences. With consequences, and then holding the involved partner accountable to those boundaries and by following through on the consequences. The do not be reactive or wishy-washy. I think that it's really important for the involved partner to know exactly where the HURT partner stands, what they will accept, what they won't accept, and the HURT partner is encouraged to be as clear as they can with the involved partner. And sometimes in order to do that, they require some support from, as I say, a mentor, support group, therapist, or what have you. The fifth is process your emotions and reactions. Very important to process your emotions and reactions so that your emotions are not controlling you, but you're in control of your emotions. So I think that's pretty self-explanatory, but again, good important stuff to do. The fifth do not is offend from the victim position. And I think you touched on that, Doug, a few minutes ago, where, you know, so often the HURT partner, because of their pain, wants to hurt the involved partner and wants to make them feel, or indirectly makes them feel guilt or shame. You know, one of the things that happens in that scenario is that it just pushes the involved partner further away, inadvertently, but it can happen.
Right.
The sixth do is maintain authentic connection and honesty. Be transparent. So have open, honest communication. That's really what that means, as opposed to do not be passive and passive aggressive. So be direct, be clear, and you know, get your point across. The seventh do is create a good support network. Really important. And a good support network are people like yourself, Doug, and what you offer in your program. You know, for sure, where, you know, you're not telling anybody what to do, but the support person helps the hurt partner figure things out for themselves. And sometimes that, you know, that takes some time, but it happens through talking, through discussion, through sharing, you know, fears and worries and concerns, but ultimately coming to their own conclusion as opposed to being told what to do. The seventh do not is don't do it alone. You know, very few of us, if anybody, has really been socialized on how to react after being betrayed by an unfaithful partner. Most of us don't know how to do that. It's important to find, you know, a support network of people who've been there or who understand what needs to be done or what shouldn't be done, who can offer that direction. And the eighth one, is give the involved partner space to figure themselves out within the boundaries that are established, as opposed to do not threaten the involved partner to do something that they're not sure that they want to do. The reason why that's so important is because if somebody is threatened and they end up doing something they're not prepared to do, they're not going to follow through, and the chances of being betrayed again increase, in my opinion. So so there's some do's and don'ts for people to consider.
That's all great stuff. I appreciate you going over that. So,
my pleasure.
Okay. David, I want to thank you for your time. I know we're kind of running out of time here, but you've really given a lot of great information. And, you know, the unfortunate part about this whole recovery aspect for people is, in my view, is that so much of it is done or attempted when there's such high emotions flying around, and you know, having maybe a concrete list like this in front of you and be able to maybe refer back to it and journal thoughts and things like that, it's very important. As I see a lot of destruction that happens when emotions get out of hand and you know, a lot of wheel spinning as a result.
Well, I totally agree, and that's why so much of what we've talked about and so much that I encourage is for the hurt partner to really focus on themselves. And part of focusing on themselves is not only establishing boundaries and consequences, not only figuring out your vision and what you want to have in your life, but also, you know, because the emotions run so high, as you just indicated, being in control of those emotions, understanding those emotions, and getting through them.
Mm-hmm. All right. Good stuff. All right. Before I let you go, I know you've got, I discovered you have a new support group. I wanted to give you an opportunity just to mention that real quick, and then how, if anybody wants to get in contact with you, how they can do that.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm in the process of, you know, getting people together to start a support group. So this support group is happening here in my office, so you have to be pretty local to Toronto, either in Toronto or around Toronto, to benefit from it. And it's going to be a 10-week program. We're going to talk about a lot of the things that we covered here in the talk today. And it's, you know, the name of the group is Empowerment. So it's really about empowering yourself so that you can not only, and developing skills so that you're not only dealing with the betrayal of the affair, but you're also creating some skills that's going to help you throughout the rest of your life. So that's going to be a 10-week program. So awesome. If anybody's listening that's local and they'd like to participate, that'd be great. I'm also going to start an online support group, which is basically going to include the same. So if anybody is interested and would like to meet online, I use a program where everybody could be present, everybody could see each other, everybody could participate, and it's basically being in a virtual room together. So cool. If anybody's interested, that's also going to happen. And it's so there's two groups, one local here in Toronto, the other one online. They're both called Empowerment, and they both the goal is the same for both.
Awesome.
As far as getting in touch with me, people can call me directly. My phone number is 416-315-5107. You can send me an email. And my email address is david@closeconnections.ca. That's closeconnections.ca. And also, if anybody's interested in receiving an email that I send out roughly once every 4 to 6 weeks, they could also send me an email and request that. It's free. It comes to you in your inbox of your email, and it's called Close Connections. So there's no reference to infidelity on the in the email.
Okay, great. David, once again, I appreciate it very much. It's been a pleasure talking to you as always, and you know, hopefully we can maybe chat again. And I know you're a sex addiction guru as well, so we might maybe address something along those lines, because I hear that quite a bit too. So,
yeah, that would be fantastic. I really appreciate the opportunity, Doug, and it's been a pleasure talking to you and through you to all your listeners. So I hope it benefits.
I'm sure it will. David, you take care. Thank you so much.
You as well. Thanks so much, Doug.
Okay. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye now.